football on off the ball.
You called them a disgrace earlier, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I'll call them a disgrace again. I'm amazed at this idea that like Messi is somehow like the player who's got a lot to answer for. It's all the others have a lot to answer for.
Join in the obsession.
Has there been a day like Sunday before?
This Sunday coming. Someone in the comments will remember a crazy, crazy afternoon. Because World Cup finals have clashed with All-Ireland finals before, but maybe has it not been an open week? Open weekend?
Richie Hogan reminded Seamus Flanagan last night and off the ball that the Leinster hurling final used to clash with the Wimbledon final.
Yes.
Right. So they would traditionally get to see the end of the Wimbledon final. I don't know about the... it does feel like that. But people say clash, like it won't clash. Like the World Cup final's at 8 o'clock on Sunday night, so that'll be fine. But you have the Open coinciding with the hurling final.
Mm.
And then you have Ireland New Zealand tomorrow morning. It's just a lot happening.
Yeah, this is an anomaly. This never happens because the World Cup is every 4 years. So you want to get that. The Rugby Championship, Nations Championship thingy, it's in its infancy. It's the first year.
Mm.
And the hurling final has never been really in July up until the last couple of years. So... this is something that never really happens.
Yeah, yeah.
We never get this.
But we've bookmarked this date, like July 19th, for at least 6 months.
People have been talking about this. Start of the year, we're talking about this.
There's a buddy of mine got married recently and wanted it to be this coming weekend, but moved forward.
Because of the sporting weekend?
There's no point. So and even though it's on the Sunday.
Mm. What's the first thing up on Sunday in terms
of the Open, the golf will be on the morning. Yeah, and then the hurling starts at 3:30, and then the World Cup final is 8:00. It's not too bad when you break it down, but it's just. Like if the golf peaks at the time that the hurling is classed, which is very, very feasible.
Will the golf
then
finish?
Say Shane Lowry and Rory McIlroy doing very well contending late into Sunday afternoon, and Galway and Limerick are going down the stretch. You know, unless you're from Galway or Limerick, you've a bit of a call to make if you're a golf fan. It's the beauty of it.
You're watching the hurling, aren't
you? The World Cup final will have the place to itself.
Yeah,
it should do anyway.
I think there could be a couple of fallers. You know, people go to the pub for the hurling and won't make the World Cup final.
Yeah,
for sure.
Get a bit giddy.
For sure. Ireland New Zealand has a place to itself tomorrow. Mm. Although you were doing the now renamed Brands final.
Yeah.
The third and fourth place.
Brands final.
They were taking the piss out of it in BBC. Wayne Rooney refused to call it the Brands final as Mark Chapman was promoting it for TV. So even France on paper is a good game, but people aren't going to give a...
It is a good game, but nobody cares. And even the players would be...
Yeah.
You know, it's a game you don't want to be involved in. If it's an underdog that gets there, you're possibly thinking they'll fight tooth and nail to try and get third place. But England and France had aspirations of winning the tournament, so third and fourth place playoff is not going to get them going.
Will you research it like any other game?
Of course I will. I'll give it my absolute
professional.
All.
Keith's a professional.
Nothing but professional, yeah. I'll give it my absolute all. Nothing but enthusiasm for the game.
Some people don't keep their silver medal, so I don't know what they're going to do with their bronze medal. Have you ever gotten rid of... any silverware or medals or anything that you've won because you weren't?
No, I honestly didn't win that much to be throwing them away. I couldn't be that flippant with them. I have a couple of promotion medals. Other than that, I didn't win too much to throw it away. Got a 3D plaque at the Tree Arena when we won the Carling Cup of Nations.
Have you ever gotten a weird Man of the Match award thing? Because there's photos going around of Shelburne a couple of weeks ago with the chainsaw of Chadwick's.
Yeah.
And then we were talking about Connor Salmon once got a pizza.
That's
in
right.
The SBL it would have been back then.
The Salmon of College, yeah.
Yeah.
A pizza for Man of the Match.
Yeah.
Jesus, I don't think my managers have been too happy with that as a reward. I got some Waterford Crystal once, which was lovely. It was like an Irish under 18s game. I got Man of the Match. I think it was on Satanta or something back in the day, and that's why there was a bit of a player of the match presentation. But yeah, some Waterford glass. My ma still has it in a little, I don't know what you'd call it. We call it a shrine, because when people walk into the sitting room, it's like, Jesus, look at all that stuff there. But no, yeah, it's all my football gear. Lovely bit of Waterford crystal in there.
I used to think that the third, fourth was playoff as a kid. I used to think this was the biggest deal ever. Obviously, notwithstanding the final, but I remember in 2002, was Turkey beat South Korea in the third, fourth of his playoff? And I remember thinking, this is massive. Turkey are going to be so happy to finish. And they probably were. That's probably a semi-final lineup where teams take it a bit more seriously. England will play every member of the squad that hasn't played or hasn't played many minutes in this game, as will France. You'd imagine.
Yeah, you would imagine, but I know fans don't like to hear this type of stuff, but can you imagine being Kobbie Mainoo, having got a sniff of a football?
He's the only outfield player not to play.
But actually, he's putting right backs into midfield before him. Even Ollie Watkins would be looking and thinking, Ivan Toney, when England need a goal, they're putting on a lad who's playing predominantly in Saudi Arabia. I know he scored goals there, but you would imagine the Premier League trumps Saudi Arabian football, but not in Thomas Tuchel's mind. And look, I'm sure we'll flick onto it, but I was here during the English game, and I kept saying if this was Gareth Southgate going to five at the back, the English media would be absolutely going berserk, and it started to lean that way. But yeah, I think he was a little bit, I wouldn't say harshly done by, but I know Jed Spence ended up getting cramp. He went into a tackle, I think it was just after Enzo Fernandez's goal, got cramp in his calf, so he needed to come off. But defensively, the English aren't as strong as everybody else, and I think we knew that going into the tournament, and Argentina took advantage of it.
I'm kind of keen to hear what you think about it a bit further removed now, because you were live on News Talk during the match, so you had your instant reaction, and the subsequent fallout appears to be that the players were just as surprised and disappointed as the rest of the world with Thomas Tuchel's tactics.
Yeah, well, look, Thomas Tuchel's tactics, I understand he puts on Dan Bourne and he puts on I think he ended up with six defenders on the pitch. Yeah. And I kept saying that if Argentina score within this game, he has no tactical freedom now to think, oh, well, we'll flick back into a 4-4-2 because of the amount of defenders he put on. So he said he stalled out, and it was the most... I mean, I was reading a thing on Sky Sports News this morning about the FA saying this is the English DNA and we want to be, you know, keep the ball and you know, all this type of stuff. And I'm thinking they're just words on a piece of paper. But when you're in the melting pot like that, when it's 15 minutes to go and Argentina are piling on the pressure, this is when you need your Jude Bellinghams. This is when you need him to get on the ball and win fouls and be the player that we all know he can be. But in those, this is the buzzword, in those clutch moments, these players just weren't coming up with it. And like, Thomas Tuchel could have went five up front if he wanted to, but if you can't pass the ball 5 yards left or right, if you can't retain possession, if you're not going to work as hard as the opposition, then tactics come secondary.
Was it really as strange as it looked that everybody who's a football fan, from the most casual person to the staunchest football fan, to a pundit like yourself to an ex-player, every single person seems to agree that that was a strange decision? But Thomas Tuchel is an expert, so could it have been that simple that he went too simple, too prematurely, and he was asking for it?
I thought he was asking for it. I mean, I'm sure he's well aware of all the statistics. I think before the game, I think they've scored 3 goals in the last 4 World Cup games, Argentina, that is. So I was always of the opinion, and I was sitting here with Will, and Will was repeatedly saying, it doesn't look like Argentina are going to score. And I it looked like it was going a little bit easy-ozy, but if you're 1-0 up against Argentina and for 55, 60 minutes, you're not you know, head and shoulders the better team, but you're just shading it. You've got to go and stand on their throat. You cannot let the game drift, because Messi was always going to come up with a moment. Alvarez has a moment in him. So I think Argentina were happy enough to think, you know what, 1-0, we're still within touching distance here, and one of our players will give us a moment. So I think the moment was for Thomas Tuchel to go, when he got the first one, go, now we need the second, not like we'll start. It's the most human thing ever. And I know we can say, well, why didn't they just stand up the pitch a bit? It's very, very difficult when you're in the middle of it.
I'm just still trying to figure out why he did it and why he did it so early. And I'm like, for you, you've been in countless dressing rooms and you've heard endless amounts of tactical instruction and strategy play. So you would have gone through all of this type of thing.
Yeah.
And when you saw the substitutes, you must have been thinking the same as the rest of us as well. It's like, what's he doing here? This is really... I straight away looked at the clock when Dan Byrne came on. Mm. This is mental.
Well, just on Tuchel and on the substitution, on the tactics, right? It is one thing and it does impact the game. But as Philippe Auclair was saying on the show, there are players on the pitch here as well. And we kind of mentioned it. But we are at the stage now where it's a post-mortem beyond the emotional reaction of what the result means, and there are people breaking the game down. And the more the statistics come out about this game, and I know statistics tell one story, but they are damning. There's one in particular that is mind-blowing for a World Cup semi-final for international players who are playing at a top level. England's number of accurate passes against Argentina in 18 minutes, between 66 minutes and 84 minutes, was 2. Mm. And you know what that was? That was a back pass from John Stones to Jordan Pickford. You're telling me that's Thomas Tuchel's fault for playing defensive football?
Yeah, partially, yeah.
How? How's that down to Thomas Tuchel playing defensive football?
Like, there was no out.
How does that stop players like John Stones?
There was no options.
Come on.
There was nothing.
Did you see the compilation of Elliot Anderson when Argentina were pushing? Every time we got the ball, it was like that compilation of Jordan Henderson a couple of years ago where he's just kicking it away. That's not Thomas Tuchel's
fault.
Turn around and pass the ball back to the fullback.
Are you saying he's
blamed? Play it into the centre back. Play it into the goalkeeper. Keep the ball for 5 minutes.
It's in their own third. Like, they're going to be playing around. They're going to get dispossessed.
How many of them do that week on week at Premier League level?
They're not playing with fellow English players.
What we're saying is this English team that we're all saying have world-class players in terms of Jude Bellingham in the number 10, Harry Kane, Anthony Gordon and Morgan Rogers. These lads can't keep the ball. And by the way, when Argentina pressed, they do it with a player less. Because Messi's not exactly breaking, he's back to go out and get the ball. So as their front players get after you, they're a player down. So if Paredes is going to go and join in the attack in the press because Messi's not joining in, then there's a hole somewhere else in the park.
Yeah.
And I think what Enda is saying is right. Thomas Tuchel could have put 17 lads up front. If you can't pass the ball and you can't retain possession and you can't have accurate passes, I don't know. Maybe I was maybe guilty of putting a little bit too much weight behind the Azteca performance. Maybe Mexico on paper aren't as good. Like, you look at them and think they're not great, but then you looked at the Azteca and the altitude and thought, okay, maybe the English deserve a bit of credit, but I don't know. Like, Cape Verde managed to give a really, really good account of themselves against Argentina, defended for long, long periods, but England just didn't seem to be able to do it.
I don't get what he was looking for too, because was it like not to go 1-0 up?
It's almost like they hadn't planned for being 1-0 up.
Yeah, so they go 1-0. So that goal is early in the second half. That's about 10 minutes in, is it?
Yeah.
Anthony Gordon. And funny enough, they actually have a real half chance after, like immediately after the goal. And that's it then.
Mm.
So genuinely, I'm not even being that facetious. It was like, he didn't want to go 1-0 up because now it's gone, no. Now it's start defending. As he had this pre-plan already, because he looked at his players, he's like, I don't really have faith in you guys to retain possession. By the way, I'm answering your question about was it all Tuchel's fault? I say partially, yeah, like it definitely was. He instigated what they tried to do in the mentality. And then the players bought into that and then some. And there was no accountability, there was no responsibility. And there was definitely an absence of leadership. And everybody knew, the second thing everybody knew was as soon as Argentina were going to score a goal, that was it for England. Yeah. It was all over. They had no option.
I don't know. Players get away with too much these days in terms of responsibility. Keep the ball, Nico.
They still had to carry themselves the responsibility.
Yeah.
But like Tuchel instigated it. Like those changes, you're looking around. You're an attacking player. You're saying like, what's he doing? What are you doing here?
Mm.
Why are we all dropping back? You're making whatever about dropping deep. The players, he's telling you to drop deep with the changes he's making. He is telling you this is what I want to do. There's no faith there.
Yeah, but if you see the game turning, you can make that decision yourself on the pitch. Go rogue if you want. It seemed like Bellingham didn't get on with Tuchel. Why is he not?
Bellingham did go rogue.
Why is he not taking
the ball and ran down the left wing at the end of the game. It was 1-1. He had nobody with him to support. Yeah. He got crowded up by three Argentinian players. That's a player taking the game. Now, Bellingham did nothing for the game. Mm. Kane did nothing for the game.
But that's what I mean. Like, why are they not taking responsibility? If they see that they're coming under pressure and the manager is making changes that are going to invite on more pressure, how about take responsibility in the game, be a leader, and start talking to your players on the pitch and say, do you know what? No, we're not dropping back. Let's get out. Let's push out. Come on, lads. We're under pressure here. Keep the ball. Calm your heads and do something about it.
Modern football doesn't have leaders. I hate the term four quarters, but it's during this World Cup, you can see teams just thinking, we'll get to the 25-minute mark, we'll speak to the gaffer, see what he wants us to do for the next 25 minutes. And like, you'd imagine Harry Kane would have been able to just get the lads around, somebody get down, goalkeeper get down, somebody. I know there's rules in place here, but you can do something. Somebody can feign an injury if you're really up against it and have a little bit of a chat. But I don't know whether, I know we're talking about the amount of defenders that Thomas Tuchel put on, but he is pretty much snookered at the top end of the park. I mean, Anthony Gordon, Morgan Rogers played on the right, Jude Bellingham and Harry Kane. Two of those lads aren't coming off the pitch. He's not taking Jude Bellingham off. And he's not taking Harry Kane off. So that Anthony Gordon did come off and Rogers didn't. So he's only really got two lads that he can take off at the top end of the park.
That was a strange sub to make, Gordon, going off.
Look, I know nobody wants to take off Harry Kane in these big games, but when you're 1-0 up and you're thinking, we need an out ball, why don't you just take Harry Kane off, put a speedster up the top end of the park? Like, even an Ollie Watkins, somebody who was a little bit more agile than Marulda, tell the lads to drop back. When you win it, Ollie, run into the channel, win fouls, break
when
up the game.
When they set up in that 5-4-1, I was looking, I was like who's their out ball? Because Kane loves going deep anyway. Yeah. And Bellingham will dribble, but kind of in a slow sort of way where he's not going to break too many lines. I was like, who's overlapping him?
Yeah.
Who's giving them options here? Like, these lads have no options all of a sudden. They've nothing.
Even Saka. I'd like to see Saka a little bit more. He's a lot of composure on the ball.
The other fallout from this is that the Argentinian players prepared at half time for the introduction of either Noni Madueke or Bukayo Saka. They expected that to happen. And because they don't like that. They don't like playing opposition who use the space.
It is like England.
So you know, Tuchel played into Argentina's hands.
Yeah, he did. It's like they were playing for extra time, England, but hadn't, as you say, planned for being a goal up. Is it too simplistic to say they bottled it? Like, and I don't mean that in a harsh sense. I mean, either manager or player.
I don't think so.
As in, went 1-0 up, saw the first World Cup finals in 66 straight ahead of them, half an hour away, just closed this game out. Yeah. And then once it went 1-1, that was it.
I don't think battling it is as catastrophic a term as people think. I think that they messed up mentally.
Yeah.
I understand it.
That's what I mean. It was more than just a physical thing.
I understand why that happened to them. They're so desperate for this to be achieved, and they had a great opportunity, and they threw it away, definitely. But Argentina were there for the taking.
Even when we say tactically Thomas Tuchel got it wrong, when you look at the goals, Enzo Fernandez's goal, he had a shot probably 90 seconds before the one he scored where he's at the edge of the box and he hits it over, and the English backline are deep in their own box. Thomas Tuchel might have said, right, we're going to drop back and we're going to defend our 18 yard box, lads. He didn't tell you to stand off and apply no pressure when people are shooting from 30 yards out. And it happened again. And even when he puts Dan Bourne on, you go and head everything that comes into the box. Where was he for Messi's, when Messi hangs it up for Martinez's goal?
Yeah, I know, yeah. Like,
so even the tactics that he did try and employ, the players couldn't employ them anyway. So I think Thomas Tuchel's tactics put them on the back foot. But it wouldn't have been the worst tactical approach ever. And if they go and win 1-0, we're all saying, oh, it's a Jose Mourinho masterclass, it's brilliant. These things are on the knife edge. But I do think with the attacking players that England have and the whole Gareth Southgate stuff playing with the handbrake on, I think you've got to go in the opposite direction. I think if England go all out attack, even 1-0 up, go all out attack, and they lose 2-1 to Argentina, I think the English public stomach it a little bit better because they've attacked the game.
And I also think because, as you say, the game is four quarters in this World Cup, the England score in the 55th minute, then they get to the hydration break in the second half. So they get to the hydration break 1-0 up. They have they have a chance to discuss this and say, right, lads, we're 1-0 up. What are we going to do now? So that's even worse for me.
Where was the Croatia approach?
Yeah.
I mean, everybody was waxing lyrical half time against Croatia. Yeah. They get a little bit of an earful and they go and press the accelerator and they blow Croatia away. Everybody said, oh, this is the England team. I know he said, the proof will be if they can do this against Argentina, Spain, France, Brazil, if they can press the accelerator and blow them away.
And also, that's the Auckland group game, and this is the semi-final, and it's the thing. We should talk about the final.
Of course, yeah.
Absolutely. Is this like a matchup that has good chemistry, Keith, in that you have this like ball-loving side in Spain? They don't go 1-0 down. They haven't done it yet. Argentina have a love of going 1-0 down. Is this set up to be possibly a classic?
I think so, yeah. I think Spain against France for me were so impressive. And I wouldn't say we're all sleeping on Spain, but I just think when I looked at Arrizabal at the top end of the park, I didn't really fancy him at all. And 5 goals and 1 assist so far in the World Cup, he's been really, really good. But the midfield of Spain, Fabian Ruiz now coming back to full fitness and slotting in there, that midfield three, Rodri, Fabian Ruiz and Dani Olmo, is unbelievable. I didn't see them being able to hurt the French in behind. I thought the French would be ultra, ultra aggressive and press them deep in their own half. And even if the Spanish got in behind, they would be able to recover and it would just be a ball keeping exercise for the Spanish. But, you know, when you hear Ole's coming out towards the end of the game, it just goes to show you how comfortable the Spanish were. Even Pedro Porro, his goal, not his biggest fan, but going forward, he was really, really good. And look, Argentina will speak about Pedro Porro in their dressing room in terms of what he does going forward. I think they will also highlight him as a weakness. But yeah, the Spanish against Argentina will be a brilliant one. I think Paredes up against Dani Almo is a key battle. Paredes is, he'll get around, he'll try and break up the game, but if Almo comes out on top of that one with Lamine Yamal coming in and bopping balls off him, if Nico Williams is fit, I would say I fancy the Spanish, but the amount of times I haven't fancied Argentina going into a couple of games now, I'm just going to lean towards them, because one way or another, Messi magic, Lautaro Martinez, Alvarez, somebody always seems to come to the party with a bit of magic. So one way or another, I think Argentina will win.
Wow.
Jeez.
I don't know how. I'm looking at it on paper and going, I fancy the Spanish, but I also fancy the English, and I also fancy another couple of teams against Argentina. So
what are you picturing, like end of 90 minutes, extra time, penalties? How are they doing it?
I think, yeah, long periods. Like the English, I think they'll try and make it a little bit aggressive. I think they'll try and make the Spanish emotional. You know, these silly, like in the first 90 seconds, England against Argentina, there was 3 fouls.
Yeah.
And they weren't like, you know, 50-50s. They were just like through a pass, elbow into the back of the head. And you think, what's going on here? This is so petulant. I think Argentina will do that again. They'll bring that South American fire. And if Spain get emotional, then I bring it a lot closer to Argentina. But you'd imagine a straight out game of football with that midfield composure that Spain have.
I think we're often guilty of like thinking that the team that's just played the game, like, so Spain's performance against France is exactly what they'll do now in the final, and Argentina will play exactly like they did against England, because it's the most recent time we saw them. But there'll be slightly different versions of themselves, because they have to be. If Argentina do that thing where they're trying to foul everyone at the start, is it a case of like Spain will be too quick on the ball for them to get to them, so by the time I nudge you, I'm definitely getting a yellow because it's so far off the ball?
Yeah, I think they might play the game a little bit better, the Spanish, in terms of when they do lay off the ball, if there's a bit of contact, they will make it seen to the referee. I mean, Rodri will suck you in. And the thing with the Argentinians, if you're facing them and they want to come and leave it on you as you're laying the ball off, it's a very difficult one, because you can lay it, and as they come to leave it on you, you can evade them and then get in behind them. So you can't really sell yourself in that situation either. But Rodri, Fabian Ruiz, Olmo against McAllister, Enzo Fernandez and Paredes, I think is obviously going to be the key battle. Everybody will look at Messi and, you know, whatever magic he has left in him. But Messi is his own little problem. Messi is a Spanish problem. He's not a Rodri problem or a Fabian Ruiz problem. He's a Spanish problem. Yeah. And if they keep him somewhat quiet, I mean, I would say Messi was quiet against England, but he comes up with 2 assists, and that second assist, I cannot tell you how much I've worked on the training ground to, obviously I'm a left footed left winger, I would go down the wing and hang them up with my left foot. The amount of coaches that say, Keith, try and do this with your right foot now, and you knock it down the wing and try and hang it up to the back stick, it's a very, very difficult one to get right. The amount of practice I've done on it, and it's still very difficult for Messi to do that in the dying embers of a World Cup semi-final when he's already absolutely shattered, and he goes past Nico O'Reilly. This is a youngster that should have all the spring of the world in his legs. So Messi, brilliance again. But
would you fancy Cucurella giving him a decent game? He's not necessarily always going to be in the right flank, but say he's kind of right of centre.
Yeah, see, Messi, it's a difficult one, because Cucurella is so, so aggressive. But the first thing I would try and do against Cucurella is get him booked. And any little petulance, if he comes and, like, his hair just be shaking everywhere as he comes at you, and he looks really, really aggressive, I would use that against him as much as I could.
He got booked after half an hour the other night, but he was still so aggressive.
After that. I remember commenting on it. And even the yellow card, like, he comes and has a nibble, and I can't remember, the player unloads it, and then he comes and just bundles him over again. You think, well, what are you doing, Cucurella? And he gets the yellow, but he was exceptional after that. Didn't run the risk of being sent off at all. But his aggression is the number one attribute I love about him, and I think if you get him booked, that aggression obviously has to come down that little bit. But he won't want to be one on one with Messi too often, but I think he will leave a little bit on Messi, and that's one of the things I like about Cucurella. He has a little bit in him as well, to just be a little bit dirty or naughty, whichever way you want to put it.
This will be Messi against Lamine Yamal, and many people will have seen the photo of them as
bathtub pick.
You mean Lamine Yamal as a baby and Messi giving him a bath? And the story behind this is actually really interesting. So basically, back in 2007, UNICEF paired up with Barcelona and a Spanish newspaper to run a charity competition to have their children photographed with the Barcelona team, this amazing Barcelona
washed
team.
By Messi.
And just by pure coincidence, Lamine Yamal's mother won this competition. So by pure coincidence, we have ended up with this amazing photograph of Messi, for some reason giving him a bath. I don't know why that was chosen as the thing that they were going to do for this photo shoot. But now we have the two of them in a World Cup final.
Ah.
And that's like an Irish story. That's like something that would happen like at all Ireland level, where somebody might know the cousin or something.
Small world sort of thing.
Small world, small country. But this is like Spain and Argentina, the greatest player of all time. What are the chances of this ever happening?
Yeah, it is mental. Like, it really is. Like, didn't he share a picture with Eider Gudjonsson's son recently, Messi, and he had a big chat with him afterwards.
Yeah,
that's
right.
About playing with his dad at Barcelona.
Yeah.
That's how long he's been around. Like.
Michael Maloney says, I wonder, did Messi give Yamal his powers in that bathtub picture? It was kind of like a football baptism.
Yeah, somebody described Yamal as like, it's a Harry Potter situation where he's the only person that can kill Messi.
Yeah.
Because he now has his powers after that.
I read somewhere that Messi is older than Lamine Yamal's father.
Yeah.
That's mad, isn't
it? Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah, his little brother keeps popping up on screen dancing at the end of games. Can I ask you, Keith, who has the better bench? So I'm just looking at the Spanish bench that came off the sideline against France. So you had Ferran Torres, Miguel Marino, of course, who's been buying in late winners, Pedri, Marcos Llorente and Nico Williams. And then from an Argentinian perspective, the other night you had Nico Gonzalez, Rodrigo De Paul, Gonzalo Montiel, Otamendi and Lautaro Martinez. Like, they're both very stacked. Like, if this game goes to extra time, goes all the way, then those benches are going to have a serious impact.
Yeah, and I think I fancy Argentina if it goes beyond the 90 minutes, just because the know-how, the muscle reflex, I think they've been to extra time twice already. They just know how to win games when it's like that. I look at that Argentina bench, and I know they've got some good defenders on the bench. Giovanni Lo Celso, in terms of changing the game going forward, I'm not sure how much he has left. Nico Paz is a brilliant, brilliant young player, doing very well at Como, but I'm not sure he will be on the pitch the same time as Messi, because they're very, calling somebody similar to Messi is a brilliant compliment, but he likes to have the ball at the feet. He won't run away from people, and he's too similar to Messi for both of them to be on the pitch at the same time. And like Otamendi coming on, if I was telling you Otamendi was going to play for Argentina at the World Cup, you'd be thinking, well, they won't be anywhere near the final. I'd have probably said the same about Romero and Martinez, but I don't know how they do it. They just seem to keep themselves in check, and some of the tackles I see them flying into, I think, oh my god. But yeah, they just seem to be able to do it. But I would say the Spanish bench for me is a little bit stronger in terms of attacking depth, but there's some strong players on each bench. Lautaro Martinez, how many he scored, 3 goals and 1 assist already, predominantly coming from the bench. But Miguel Marino coming off the bench for Spain seems to have that super sub tag. And Arsenal, I know, went on to win the Premier League. I thought Arsenal suffered when Marino came out of the Arsenal team. He was always good for a goal and pushing standards for Arsenal. So I think he's a big one for the Spanish. I really do think it's a toss of a coin, but Argentina will just get it done. And it's just, I know it's the first time we've had seeds 1, 2, 3 and 4 in the semis. Is this the first time we've ever had seed 1 and 2 in the final?
Yeah, good point. Possibly is, yeah. Yeah.
Do you see Spain scoring and then losing?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if that happened. I think the Spanish are more than capable of scoring a goal. Maybe then going a little bit more possession-based and becoming a little bit blunt up front. Then maybe Argentina catching them, Paredes winning the ball up high. You know, I don't know. They actually do press quite well for the team, as I say, without Messi pressing. You know, Julian Alvarez is brilliant at setting the press off. So I wouldn't be surprised if the Spanish sort of overplay, make a little mistake, and Argentina going hurt them. So I think there will be goals, and I definitely don't see a nil-all stalemate for 120 minutes.
It's the one thing, like, France really seemed to get dejected when they went one down, and you just don't see that happening with Argentina.
Yeah,
it happens. They won't change their demeanour too much. In fact, they may even rise to it.
Yeah, I was really
a good powerful tool to have, you know.
It is. Football's all about reacting. I mean, very rarely does the manager give you instructions at the start of the match, and it's, you know, everything's rosy in the garden for 90 minutes and you don't have to rearrange anything. So both teams will have to work on the fly. Both teams will need problem solvers, but I just see Argentina are able to put plasters over situations. Lamine Yamal might be getting on top, but they will, you know, stifle it, and the game will become disjointed and, mm-hmm. you know, a little bit horrible. So I just think they have game management know-how, but the Spanish are on a 17-game unbeaten run, and in that time they've 13 clean sheets. The Spanish are, I wouldn't say going under the radar, but I think a lot of people had the French ahead of them, and now the French are not there. I think everybody's just now leaning towards the Spanish.
Yeah.
Even though I expect Argentina to win, which is mental.